everybody, and welcome to the Deadhead Cannabis Show. Jim Marty here, running around Denver, counting marijuana inventory. I got my partner up in Chicago, Larry Mishkin. How you doing, Larry?
Jim, I'm doing just fine. Thank you very much. Hope you and the family had a nice Christmas and a nice New Year's. Running around and checking inventory, that's not a bad way to spend a day. What's that all about?
Oh, you know, for closing out the books of a cannabis business, you've got to get a very accurate inventory on the last day of the year. So that's what I've been doing the last couple of days, is counting pound after pound of cannabis.
Boy, I'd say that's one of those jobs that, you know, sounds tough, but somebody's got to do it, huh?
Yep. The only good thing is I'm getting a little, you know, some very inexpensive marijuana. In Colorado, you cannot give away marijuana by law. So I got 7 joints yesterday for 7 cents.
Nothing wrong with that. That's a fair trade, I'd say. You know, you give them a hard day's work, they make a nice deal with you, and you're all set for New Year's Eve.
Right. So anyway, this is our last show of 2020. Yep. COVID still seems to be a lot in the news. Before I flew to Aspen for this inventory count, I did get tested negative because
good.
I thought we were going to check the people getting off the plane, but it didn't.
How crowded was Aspen?
Well, it's very different. Certainly, it's nothing like it normally would be on New Year's.
Sure.
The restaurants are trying to stay open, and they're at 25% capacity, so they are open. Last call's at 10 o'clock, and there was quite a few people skiing on the mountain.
That's nice. Did you have a chance to ski?
Yeah, I skied Sunday and Monday, and it was good, really good skiing. Got a little bit of powder going on Monday, and then Tuesday was a powder day, but I had to work. So,
where you said you were going to ski Ajax?
I skied Ajax on Sunday. I hadn't skied it for some time. It was just as steep as I remember it.
Well, maybe as we get older, it gets a little steeper.
Yeah, I actually felt real good. My legs were a little sore, but everything else was working good. I felt my breathing and
wonderful.
All feel good. So, but I skied for miles and miles and miles.
Well, you know, you've been doing it your whole life practically, right? So it's like second nature for you to just get up there. You can do it with your eyes closed, except for the damn trees.
Yep.
Well, we finally got some snow here the other night, kind of unexpectedly, about 5 or 6 inches, but it was just one of those gross, you know, really heavy wet snows you can't really do much with. And, you know, it's like going to give you a heart attack if you try and shovel it off your driveway. So I had to go recruit my son, who was, to his credit, more than happy to come out and help his father not die. And we got it all shoveled off, and that's it. But now, you know, it's typical Chicago. It's 40 degrees today, so it's all just turned into a big slush mess everywhere, and who knows what it'll be like by the time we hit midnight tomorrow night. So we'll see, but you know, nothing too exciting going on here weather wise or anything else, although I will tell you, we did finally get some certainty in one of these cannabis lawsuits, but unfortunately it went the way these things normally do, which means that the state won. And specifically, while they're still fighting out the dispensary licenses, and that lawsuit rages on as they try to figure out what to do with that scoring system. A group of craft grow applicants formed a craft growers association, and then they filed a mandamus lawsuit asking the court to order the Illinois Department of Agriculture to announce the winners of the craft grow licenses. And they cited a bunch of expenses that they're running into by having to maintain property and workforces and other things that are required under the statute. So they claimed that, you know, there was an actual harm and a damage to them, and they were applicants, so they had standing to bring the lawsuit, and they got a full hearing on it. And just 2 days ago, the Cook County judge came down, and as many of us expected he would, sided with the state and said that the state does not have to announce if it's not ready to announce yet. And although it found that there were many legitimate arguments made by the plaintiff, by the Craft Grow Association, they weren't sufficient to overcome all the deference that the state is entitled to as it runs this program, and especially since this was the first time going through the program. The court also recognized it's not like there's a pattern or a system that's been used over and over to which people had grown accustomed. You know, nobody really knew how this was going to go. So that's unfortunate, because now nobody knows when the craft grow is going to be announced. There had been some rumors that it was going to be announced perhaps sometime in mid to late January. But I think that all of that was kind of predicated upon a belief that the judge might rule in favor of the plaintiffs in that lawsuit. But having ruled in favor of the state, you know, the officials now have to sit there and say to themselves, hey, look, we're currently up to our eyeballs in legal battles on the dispensary side because the second and third place finishers came in and challenged our scoring system. We use the exact same scoring system in the cultivation, in the craft grow applications. So if we give out the craft grow applications now, and then later on in the lawsuit, the judge ultimately rules that our scoring system was no good, that's going to create a backlash over here on the cultivation side, and all the second and third place finishers there will now all go crazy and file. So we'd rather wait and see what the judge says, and then that way we'll know that when we award the craft grow licenses, we're awarding them in a manner that's consistent with law as it's been interpreted by the court. And while that all sounds really nice, the unfortunate part is that could push off announcements of these licenses, you know, well into April or May of next year, 2021. And, you know, quite frankly, Jim, that's a really long time to ask applicants to sit around and you know, carry their business without being able to do anything just so the state can work all the various kinks out of its system.
That's a shame. That's a real shame because it is expensive. You got to pay rent on an empty building. You know, I'm working with a group in Massachusetts right now. They're probably at least a year from first harvest, and they've sunk $3 million into the program so far.
Yep. And there's an added cost here in Illinois because, again, part of the issue with the scoring system is the social equity program, and it was quickly determined that the way the state had set it up in a rather unfortunate manner now required that every single applicant attain social equity status in order to have a chance to get a license. One of the ways that an applicant could get social equity status if they did not live in a disparate neighborhood or if they had not previously been arrested for marijuana offenses was if they made a commitment to ensure that at least 51% of their workforce was comprised of individuals who did qualify for social equity one way or another. So that basically was the thing that allowed everyone, no matter where you lived or what had happened before in your life, you could qualify for social equity. However, the catch that the state put in was that at the time you submitted your application, you had to file an affidavit and proof demonstrating that these individuals were already employed by you and being paid. And when it was asked about this in the question and answer session, the state said, they don't, you know, we recognize you don't have a marijuana license yet. They don't have to be working for your marijuana business yet, but you have to have them employed now. So in other words, all these applicants who went that route for social equity have had to have been carrying basically a staff of people and continue to have to do so because that's their social equity ticket. And they're saying, but, you know, the longer you make us have to pay salaries to people whose services we really don't need yet. But on the other hand, these, you know, these applicants and these owners can't yell very loudly about that because then that flies in the face of, you know, their quote unquote true commitment to social equity.
Well, that's all too bad. Well, on a brighter note, I've been running around Colorado the last couple of days. I was in Aspen yesterday and I'm in Denver doing end of the year inventory. And sales in Colorado are brisk. Prices are pretty firm, $30 ace, $50 cartridges, sometimes $30 vape pen cartridges.
Yep.
And so, well, I've been running around doing these inventories. In fact, I just pulled up at a new client here, and there's about 10 people in line outside. So sales are brisk here, and I've been really impressed with the – I've counted – hundreds and hundreds of 1 pound bags of cannabis and just amazing looking flower. It really makes you want to try some of it.
I'm sure it does. That's the problem with that job. You know, you walk around all day, you know, just looking at all that stuff, but you know, the law says you can't touch any of it right then and there. I'm glad to hear that those numbers are going well in Illinois. They continue to go strong. Surprisingly though, numbers that were just released show that in Michigan, cannabis sales have dropped rather substantially. Since July of this year, sales have dropped by almost $15 million a month.
I wonder why.
I haven't been. Nobody's really been able to give a very particular reason about it. It's various agencies have looked into it, and I think that what they say is that they're running into a problem that there's a number of municipalities in Michigan that opted out of adult use sales, and they've kind of run out of space everywhere else, and I think that they've created an oversaturated market, not because of the total number of licensees that they have, because those licensees are all relegated to certain designated areas because such a big chunk of the state has said we don't want to be any, have any part of it.
Well, Colorado continues to be on pace to have a record year at $2.2 billion, and a new record of sales, and again a mature market of 11 years old.
I think that's great. And I think it's important as well, because as certain states kind of fluctuate with their sales, having states like California and Colorado are always going to be the anchors, or at least well into the near future, for cannabis and for cannabis markets. And, so no matter how well any one other particular state is doing, I think that the national conscience and image on this will continue to be shaped by those states, given both their size, their experience, and kind of the public's imagination as to what we're talking about when we say Colorado marijuana and in California marijuana.
Yes. Well, here's to a prosperous 2021 for the industry. Hopefully Illinois will come online with more licenses and craft licenses. And I am going to have to go because I do have to do another inventory count here at the end of the day here.
Okay.
So, anyway, Larry, I'm going to let you close out the year for us. Go ahead and take us to the last 10 or 15 minutes. And I'm just going to say to all of our followers out there, and we do have quite a few followers. I have people in my world or people I meet and say they really enjoyed this show and are listen to it regularly. So thank you to our listeners. And Jim Marty saying, I will see you in 2021.
Jim, have a great, happy, healthy new year. Be safe, and we'll talk soon. Thank you so much. Enjoy that count and get it right.
Happy new year.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, so Jim has left us, and so I will continue to go on for a few minutes here with some other interesting information that's out there and things to be considering as we head out of the end of the year here. So we do show numbers that have dropped in Michigan. That's obviously a disappointment as a Midwest state along with Illinois. The Michigan's a little bit of a bellwether state, I think, in terms of where things stand in the middle part of the country. And even though Illinois' numbers continue to remain strong, Michigan could be setting an example for the ways markets in the Midwest can go if you do not have a sufficient amount of state approval. I think that the numbers that they were talking about in Michigan is that in a state that has approximately 1,700 municipalities, 152 have authorized medical cannabis licenses, but only 85 municipalities out of 1,700 have approved adult use licenses. And with those kind of numbers, there's just no way for a state to succeed, I think, on an overall statewide basis. Within those 85 municipalities, you can only have so many dispensaries before they, all kill each other in terms of pricing and competition. And that's interesting to see. And I think that what that does is it also speaks, as we see in politics all the time, to the various political influences and social dynamics that we have throughout a particular state. Certainly in Michigan, I think it's fair to say that nobody would be surprised to hear that Detroit and Ann Arbor and East Lansing are all states that have allowed adult use. Grand Rapids, I believe, is another one. So some of the larger states, the states with the big state schools, the towns with the big state schools, and those are the ones that have. But as you get out into the center of Michigan and a little bit farther north, Michigan becomes much more rural and it becomes much more conservative. And certainly that, I think, has been evidenced in a lot of what we've seen throughout this last election cycle and everything that's gone on up in the state of Michigan. And as a person who went to school in Ann Arbor and likes the state of Michigan a lot, I'm not here to criticize them, just to point out that you know, there have been some things that have gone on in that state that have raised eyebrows in terms of strong movement swinging one way and maybe going a little bit too far in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. And obviously, you know, in this industry, we have to be very careful. It's a very heavily regulated industry. You know, we need everyone to be on the same page and to be working together with us. But it would be wonderful to see more municipalities in the state of Michigan open up. And I shouldn't just be pointing at Michigan. The state of Illinois is the same way. There's a large number of towns in the state of Illinois that have so far refused to allow adult use sales, notwithstanding the fact that you would otherwise consider these municipalities to be, you know, very upwardly mobile and, you know, certainly modern enough to be not old fashioned or anything like that. But yet, nevertheless, we see a reluctance to really allow adult use marijuana to be sold on an open statewide basis. You know, why that's the case, I think we've talked about before, and we could certainly talk about more if we wanted to. But it just really comes down to 100 years of government brainwashing and only, you know, 5 or 10 years of a change in a sentiment that all of a sudden, not only do we not have the danger here that we thought we had, but this is actually a pretty good thing on a lot of levels. It helps the states financially. And as we've talked about, study after study after study just demonstrates the efficacy of marijuana, which, again, just to be clear, nobody's going around and just advocating that people should just get intoxicated and go out and do stupid things. Marijuana, like anything else, is something that has to be treated responsibly. And people owe it to themselves and everyone else to make sure that before they indulge in marijuana, that they understand what it is they're indulging in. They understand doses and quantities, wait times for it to kick in and become effective, you know, and what you can and cannot do. And certainly at the top of that list is get behind the wheel of a car. And we want to emphasize again that nobody in the industry advocates intoxicated driving. However, it goes without saying that as between drivers who are intoxicated with alcohol and drivers who are intoxicated with marijuana, the marijuana drivers are considerably safer, so much safer that it's really creates the illusion that marijuana is safe to drive under. And that's, I think, an important distinction as well, that we are a society that advocates a certain amount of public intoxication, certainly on Friday and Saturday nights, on holidays, on Super Bowl Sundays, and all sorts of other events. But really, given any Saturday night in any major metropolitan area, there's a large number of people who go to dinner somewhere and have a drink or two or three and get behind the wheel of their car and drive home. And we as a society don't run around with our hands in our heads and say that's the end of alcohol. In fact, we tried that once and it backfired spectacularly. You know, and so to continue to do that about marijuana seems to me to be hypocritical, but not only hypocritical, dangerous, because if there's studies that tell us this, and if people given a choice between smoking marijuana or drinking alcohol as their preferred form of intoxication choose to smoke marijuana instead of drinking alcohol, then we would find that everybody's rides home on Saturday night are measurably and demonstrably safer than they are when everybody's intoxicated by having had too much alcohol to drink. But yet again, there was an article here in one of the newspapers the other day put out by a group anti-marijuana talking about the large number of marijuana-related accidents and cases. And they try to parse them out and say whether one person was high or another person was high, or whether they think that they can prove that marijuana was the contributing factor. But traditionally, what all of these tests have shown is that they do a blood sample, and if it comes back positive for THC, then based on the presence of the THC and the amount that's there, they will then make a prediction that, yes, this person must have been intoxicated on marijuana at the time of the accident. Of course, that's nonsense, and it's a silly, silly way to do anything. But that's what that's the type of bias that continues to linger by people who are against marijuana just because they're against marijuana, and it's unfortunate. And we can talk about it more, but I think that after a while, people get the idea. It's not something that society as a whole should be wringing its hands about. And I think that's reflected that a very large number of our percentage of our society has approved marijuana and supports it. And they see through all of that propaganda now. And they've taken the time to either read up on it, or they've experimented with marijuana themselves, or they know people that have. And, you know, they're not afraid to recognize and understand that marijuana is not the evil substance that the government has made it out to be. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that's really the best thing about this industry, that we have an industry that's taken hold and been able to grow while the federal government continues to call it illegal. And you just don't see that with any other product or anything in our current society, or I would add, you know, really as far back as civilized society has taken place. And the fact that this has happened can only be chalked up to the fact that marijuana is an important enough substance for human beings that the mere fact that a group of legislators have ruled it illegal is not going to be enough to keep them from accessing it and using it in whatever way they believe is most beneficial to them. And that's certainly where we're trying to go with this industry. And that's the direction I think that we are going. And once again, if we need any proof, look at South Dakota and Mississippi, Montana, and other red states that this last election cycle approved marijuana legislation by large amounts. These weren't close battles. It came down to 51% Republican, 49% Democrat, or the flip-flop, depending on which state you're in. These propositions were passing by 20% and 30%, and that's a significantly huge margin in any general public election. And that can only be interpreted to mean that we as a society are now very open to marijuana being a part of it. And it's really just a matter of getting law enforcement, a few of our societal moralists, whether religious leaders or not necessarily. But there are certainly people out there who, from a moral perspective, oppose marijuana, regardless of its legality. There are some alarmists who still believe that it was going to cause a nation full of schizophrenic crazies. And, you know, some of these are fears we'll just never be able to get over for certain people. And like I say, though, that'll just create more for the rest of us. And while they're going around pulling their hair out of their head, we'll be all very relaxed and enjoying ourselves. So in that respect, it almost becomes a positive. But it's the interesting part about these lawsuits in Illinois that we were talking about is that it shows just how important this really is to people. You know, I mean, these people have already spent $150,000, $200,000, or $250,000 and some for cultivation applications, maybe even more, just to get their applications on file. And now they're willing to throw another $50,000 or $100,000 at litigation in an effort to, you know, get those licenses awarded and to make sure that they get a license. That's a lot of money. And it's a lot of money in a type of proposition where if you ultimately don't get the license, it's like making a bet in Las Vegas. You know, you don't get your license, you don't get your money back, you don't get anything. You go home and lick your wounds and decide if you're going to try again. So I suppose on the one hand, it's no wonder that people, after having spent so much on the applications, come forward with such aggressive litigation if they aren't ones who actually get the licenses. You know, the other perspective, of course, is, hey, look, everybody goes in this more or less the same way. And unless it can be demonstrated that there is, you know, objective fraud that clearly and demonstrably favored certain groups of people over other groups of people, you know, then I can understand more of a need to engage in that type of litigation. You know, and as tough as it might be, if you're on the side that didn't get the license, and I've certainly been on that side a lot more than I've been on the side that does get the license, just given the numbers and the percentages, it is hard to walk away from it. But one of the things I try to tell my clients is, look, the more important thing here for right now is that the program in whatever particular state you're in has a chance to really, you know, take hold and get strong and take off and become popular. And that's not going to happen if the population is sitting around watching the potential owners fight tooth and nail over all of this to the point where it becomes more of a distraction than anything of interest to the public. We want the public to come out. We want them to support our industry. And the best way to do that is to get those first round of license holders out there and operating. You know, a state like Illinois, this is only the first round out of maybe three or four or five rounds. So I say to a lot of people, instead of spending your time and money filing the lawsuit that you're probably not going to win, and not only that, but it slows down the entire program, and the program can't really get started. It can't really go forward. It can't really have its success measured because it's being restricted by this, by all of this litigation that's going on. And, you know, again, it's hard to say who's right and who's wrong. And I guess a lot of it just depends on what side of the table you're sitting at. But, you know, I do believe that overall we're in a stronger position when we don't file as many lawsuits. In fact, there was just an announcement that in the state of Missouri, which has been having a ton of lawsuits brought against it for its medical program, whose winners were supposed to have been announced almost a year before Illinois, down there a Missouri judge just upheld the state's medical marijuana program against an unconstitutionality charge. So after however much time and money was spent by groups who did not prevail and who were very upset and, you know, waged war in Missouri, and they did, after all of this time, a year or 2 years later, they've now inevitably lost. And the state program suffers for it, because as of right now, there's only a small handful of dispensaries that have actually opened in Missouri that weren't in the districts that were being challenged in the litigation. You know, the people who have gotten their licenses and now finally get to open have been hurt, because they lost a lot of time and opportunity to get set up and get started and really, you know, get sunk in. And clearly the people who didn't get licenses have lost, because they spent all that time and money on the applications, and then they spent all this time and money on the litigation and came up on the short end of it. But it happens over and over again. And I think there's a lot of emotion that plays into filing these lawsuits. And as a guy who makes always made his money in the courtroom being a litigator, you know, my biggest hope is that one of the lessons that we overall begin to learn from all of this is that these lawsuits really don't get anywhere. And they may not be the best way to go in terms of trying to right what a second or third place finisher perceives as a wrong. But nevertheless, that's where we went this time. You know, right now in Illinois, the medical guys are all thrilled to death because they continue to monopolize the market. And, you know, there may be an argument that could be made that after all they had to put up with in the medical program for so long, that they're entitled to a little more time. But I think that overall the program succeeds by having more people in it, not fewer. And creates more competition and better products and better pricing and better all of that. And so the hope really is that we get this Illinois market opened up very soon and get all of the players in who the statute has promised will be allowed to play in terms of numbers and everything else. Otherwise, as far as marijuana, I think that's it for this year. We will all keep a very close eye on the election in Georgia that's coming up here in a day or so. This is very important, as we have discussed, because if the Republicans maintain control of the Senate, Mitch McConnell will continue to act as the doorkeeper on what legislative acts do and do not see the Senate floor for a vote. There's been a number of marijuana laws that have gotten through the House, banking and the most recent Decriminalization Act, and McConnell has showed zero interest in moving any of those forward during his time as president of the Senate. Doesn't necessarily mean that he will still be as much of a stick in the mud, if you will, on a going forward basis. But it does mean that I think that our chances are, meaning the people who are interested in seeing forward movement in the legalization of marijuana, our chances are better served if we have a Democratic majority in the Senate with a Democratic president who will be the one who controls the flow of legislation that reaches the Senate floor. So, of course, that makes the battle on in Georgia on the two Senate races a huge, huge, huge battle as far as the marijuana industry is concerned. And it'll be very, very interesting ultimately to see how not just how those battles turn out, but what they do mean for the cannabis industry, large and small on a going forward basis. So certainly that's going to be the very big story here that we're keeping our closest eye on over the next period of time. But there's all sorts of new legislation that's been coming out, and some that hits the books on January 1st. And in the coming weeks, Jim and I will try our best to get through as much of those as we can, at least the ones of interest, and point out both so that people are aware of what the law is, but also, again, to kind of help us gauge where we as a society are going with this. And you can often tell that based on the type of laws that are passed. On the musical side, you know, look, it's the end of the year, and this is the Deadhead Cannabis Show, and we talk a lot about the Grateful Dead, and we talk a lot about Phish. And last week, Jim and I, bemoaned the fact that there is no New Year's shows, and we talked about how special the New Year's shows are. I've never seen a Phish New Year's show. Jim has seen both Ted and Phish for New Year's, so that gives him a leg up on that. But as a guy who saw three or four Grateful Dead New Year's shows, I can tell you that there's nothing like it. And, those were always the time that the shows leading up to, in the New Year's Eve show, when the Dead would break out a lot of new covers. Give Me Some Lovin', Day Tripper are a few of the ones I remember them playing from past New Year's Eve shows that I was at. And they'd always have some eclectic band opening for them. The Neville Brothers one year, they were great and came out and played all of their hit songs, and then brought the house down with their cover of Dobie Gray's pop classic Drift Away, which was kind of funny to be hearing right as you're getting ready to see the Grateful Dead on New Year's Eve. But they were always a lot of fun. And when Bill Graham was still around, they were especially a lot of fun. And, everything we've ever read about it and heard about it talks about how much Bill himself loved the New Year's Eve shows and how they would, what would the big disguise be, Father Time, one year riding in on a giant marijuana joint, other years coming in on a cloud or a guitar or on top of a rainbow. But it was always the show within a show, and you'd go to a Dead show and they'd come out and play a first set that might even be fairly pedestrian, but it was the anticipation afterwards while you were waiting for the countdown to midnight when they would kick in with the second set. You know, what are they going to do? What kind of gimmick are they going to have? And of course, most importantly, what song are they going to play? How are they going to open up the new year? I was lucky. I saw a wide variety. I saw Sugar Magnolia twice. I saw In the Midnight Hour once. And, very strangely enough, one year they played Going to Hell in a Bucket as the midnight song, which I wasn't really quite sure about, other than, you know, maybe Bobby was looking for a little recognition, but he certainly gets it with Sugar Mag. And I would say that out of all of those and any of the songs that they could play at midnight, in my personal opinion, there is nothing like the Dead kicking into Sugar Magnolia right at midnight to launch a new year. It's the best way to spend the first 10 minutes of a new year. And if you can do it in the company of a room full of Deadheads who are all enjoying themselves in their own unique ways, all the better. And then we'd all come tumbling out of there at 2 or 3 in the morning, and they'd give us a bagel and some cream cheese and a little cup of orange juice to take with us. And off we'd go into the night and try and get a few hours of sleep before dragging our asses out of bed to watch football. Because especially out there on the West Coast, it would all start so early in the morning. But, you know, quite frankly, we wouldn't have had it any other way. And if they were still having the New Year's shows, I dare say that certainly with the kids old enough now, we'd maybe still be heading out there and checking some of those out. But instead, we'll go to the live casts that they're going to have with Bob Weir and Wolf Brothers. Phish is going to have some pretty cool stuff, or had some pretty cool stuff, I guess, depending on when you listen to this podcast. But certainly in the next show, we will do a quick recap of some of the New Year's Eve musical offerings that were out there, and try to get reviews from people who heard various parts of them. And we're really excited about 2021. We think we have some great guests coming up. Jim and I are excited to continue to track the progress of marijuana and where it is both legally, how it's doing as a business, and where it stands overall in society. And we do that ourselves, but we also do it with you, the listeners. And we thank all of you for taking the time this year to listen to our podcast. We thank our guests for taking the time to come on our show and help make the podcast content more interesting, to hopefully bring in more people. And Listen, if people listen to our show and just come away with the idea that, hey, marijuana is not such a bad thing, then we've done our job. We assume that people already feel that way about the Grateful Dead. But I guess if we could convert somebody on that too, that's also a tip of the cap. But, you know, we're really focused on making sure that at the end of the day, society as a whole is comfortable with the fact that marijuana is here to stay and is going to become an acceptable part of our society where people can smoke it without having to feel embarrassed or ashamed that they're doing so. So just to wrap up, Larry Mishkin of the Hoban Law Group, thank you to everyone. Thanks to my co-host Jim Marty for a great year. Thanks to our producer Dan Humiston and MJ Bulls for the tremendous job they do week in and week out in producing our show, taking the time to make sure it gets taped right and editing it and posting it and publicizing it. And they really do the hard part and the tough work, and we're lucky to get to work with them. So to Dan and everyone there, Happy New Year as well. And to all of our listeners and anyone else out there, we wish you a very, very happy, healthy 2021. Hope that this year is a little bit better than 2020. And I'm sure for some people that'll kind of be a no-brainer. And for the rest of us, if it can just be a great year, we can stay healthy, listen to some great music, and find a way to capture some live dead again. And last but not least, enjoy your cannabis, enjoy it a lot, and enjoy it responsibly. Thank you, everyone. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back.